Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitin. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Top of the eighth inning, 9-6, Yankees.
Okay.
All right. There's still time. I think we're getting game four. That's my prediction.
I wouldn't be so mad about that. No.
Welcome, everybody, here on the YouTube channel. Have you hit subscribe? We'll wait. Yep. Like, subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Hit that bell icon.
That's your admission to get into the show, as we are going to be getting into Title Tuesday. And for everybody that is on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and if you're not, we can wait for that too, because on Thursday, we're dropping our latest movie review, as Wei and I, we have gone to the movies, and we are going to chat The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne Johnson. Why are we reviewing this? Because odds are you did not see this movie, based on its performance at the box office this past weekend. Wei, did you venture out to see the movie today?
I went through rain. Rain wasn't about to stop me. Traffic in Toronto with the construction was not about to stop me.
I did drive to see
The Smashing Machine. Yes. That's right. Yep. Went to my theater, watched the movie. I was one of, I want to say, six at most people inside my theater for a Tuesday matinee, and sat down to watch the movie.
Okay, well, we'll share our live experiences coming up on Thursday. So that's coming up. We also put out our review of the Smashing Machine documentary on the free feed and here on the YouTube channel. We did this review over a year ago, and for those that want to hear our thoughts on the documentary, which came out in 2002, which is this is honestly one of the best. I would argue the best MMA documentary that I have seen. There's not a crazy plethora of them, but it's obviously the inspiration behind the movie, and I think it's definitely worth watching if you saw the movie and want to contrast it to the original. So that is out there, Rewind Away number 150. And with that said,
this is a head-to-head battle. Of course, our friends over at Up Next are doing a live show right as we speak, so after listening to this, you can go listen to their take on NXT versus TNA Showdown. Maybe you just listened to them and are listening to us. Well, whatever you happen to watch tonight, we have you covered.
And just fast forwarding to the weekend, Wei and I will be doing a show Saturday night covering Crown Jewel. The show is on Saturday morning. We'll be up Saturday night. So you can check out that here on the YouTube channel. And then Sunday night for Post Wrestling Cafe members, I will be with Jack Wannan covering TNA Bound for Glory. One final table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I meant to ask you this. Had we not gotten this Cena-AJ match, would you have thought AJ would have been on this Bound for Glory show this weekend?
Sure. Yeah. Although, even without this match, yeah, I wonder. I would say
when
yes.
He showed up at Slammiversary, I thought the natural follow-up to this is him doing a match at a pay-per-view, but I mean, obviously, it's not going to be on
there's
the continent.
There's always next year.
No, he's going to be, well.
Is he done at the end of this year?
He's what, saying he's going to retire in 2026. He hasn't said when in 2026.
He's got one more year.
He's also a wrestler saying he's going to retire at this certain date. So yeah. Remains to be seen. Well, tonight was Title Tuesday, getting shifted a night earlier, going up against NXT Showdown. I think these will be very interesting numbers, not just because of our new duo, Big Data and Panel, but this was going against NXT Showdown, this third game of the Jays and Yankees as well. So, I mean, there was certainly a lot of competition here. And I don't even know what to assume that these two shows are going to do, because this new era of ratings data, I think, is throwing everything for a loop. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I would safely say that I feel NXT is going to outperform Title Tuesday.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it'd be a shock if like it was even so close, you know, and AEW doing something not on their night. I think it would just be a curiosity number, honestly, for Dynamite.
I think all the numbers are going to be curiosity numbers for the foreseeable future, because we're establishing kind of what the baseline is going to be of these new numbers. And was the last week or so an anomaly? Or I think there's going to be a lot of dissecting all of these numbers. I mean, what sure. Else are numbers four way?
Nothing. Yeah.
Tony Schiavone welcomes us to Homecoming and brings out Hangman Page and a suit-wearing Samoa Joe. I was already digging this segment before a word was even uttered. Page mentions the six-year history he's had in AEW. I've won, I've lost, I've committed arson. I even think I was proposed to. And as well as dressing as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. But I have never been as confused as I was last week when you came after me. And I volunteered to help you. But I understood everything after you said that I had never beat you. Joe, you've been angry with yourself. And I owe you. I owe you for your help at All In Texas. You and several others. I appreciate it. But my gratitude ends there. And I will not let you take this title. And now it was Joe's turn. He says, everything you've said is true. But Hangman, I don't see you as the pinnacle of pro wrestling. You are a pretender. The ops ensured your victory, and I've been distracted with the Death Riders when I should have been focusing on my prime target, the world champion. And you say you're a fighting champion? All you're doing is padding your record, pretending to be a fighting champion by fighting people on short notice. You're a fraud, and I'm here to check you. And I'm going to choke you unconscious. Take your belt, and I'll show Paige who you really are, and I will be the rightful world champion. Paige will take every shot and he'll throw back too. I will not submit, Joe. And the longer this match goes, you cannot outlast me. And I hope that when I beat you, you can look me in the eye and see me as the real world champion. This segment was terrific. By the end of this, you feel like Hangman is as much fighting for something as Joe is going for this belt. Like, this is a significant accomplishment to solidify Hangman's title reign. Is he needs to beat this former champion to establish himself. I'm very impressed with what they've got here in literally a week to build this up. And I'm much more optimistic about, like, if you had told me before WrestlePalooza, okay, we're going to go with Kyle Fletcher and then Samoa Joe, I don't know what my expectation would be pay-per-view wise, but from the indications of WrestlePalooza, I'm pretty optimistic on what these two can do on pay-per-view on what is not going to be a head-to-head night as well. So I think they're doing a great job with this. And, you know, we've only got a week and a half until this pay-per-view. So it is a very quick build.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it just kind of gives you an indication of just how deep the bench is in AEW, that you could lose two or three of your top guys and still have a Samoa Joe waiting just to, you know, step up to just feel like he could be a top guy just really at any point. And really just has been showing it these past couple of weeks. And it's bringing out like some excellent work of fire from Hangman as well. And this was just a very simple, pure pro wrestling talking segment to really show you the skill level of both guys. Joe cuts the best promo that he could. Paige responds and we build up to a fight. And all of a sudden it, It's a hot main event.
It's two guys who think they're the best. We're going to have a match to determine who's the best. Yeah.
Paige brought up his bad neck, so that is going to continue to be a focus of this match itself. Of course, also the Kikita clutch and how he won't tap. So look for those to be storylines that we'll get as we build towards this pay-per-view. How many weeks are we?
What Dude,
are we?
It's next week. Next weekend. Yeah, next weekend. Like next week is your final TV. Mm-hmm. The conglomeration are all together backstage, and Mark Briscoe tees up all the matches they have coming up. Kyle O'Reilly was essentially begging the fans to chant Kyle like they did for the last O'Reilly-Fletcher match. Maybe the audio wasn't that great because this did not translate to the match. They were not able to replicate the magical environment that Kent Washington provided. Maybe this Kyle-on-Kyle violence should be for when they hit the Pacific Northwest.
I think they could. They kind of killed it by having Kyle prompt the audience. There's nothing less cool than being asked to chant something.
Yeah.
You know, chants are usually like, they feel kind of like, you know, rebellious and, or just, you know, like organic. And this was not that at all.
So John Moxley and Tomohiro Ishii, this is their third meeting. Two legendary locations where they previously met, of course, the G1 Climax in 2019 and Hamilton.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have two. So their first U.S. match.
That's right. Yes, yes. Truly an international feud. Yeah.
Shafir gets involved, raking the eyes of Ishii early on, and Moxley takes over. They have their big forearm exchanges. Moxley bloodies up the nose of Ishii, which, I mean, Tomohiro Ishii bleeding from the nose, it certainly added something to this match. He powerbombs Moxley out of the corner, and then he's absorbing punches on the turnbuckle and sidesteps a stomp, lariats Moxley, and then the two of them are just trading lariats. Moxley hits a running knee and the cutter, and then a stalling pile driver as he gives the middle finger. I think this guy gave about like two dozen middle fingers to the crowd during this match. Ishii staggers up, takes a stomp, but kicks out, and then Ishii pops up from a German and is hit with the paradigm shift for another big near fall, and then the rear naked choke is applied. Ishii goes out at 12 minutes and 40 seconds as Moxley gets the dominant win going into the I Quit match with a man whose purpose in life is to make people look dominant going into their big matches.
Yeah, excellent match. Every moment spectacular, as you would expect. I mean, Ishii has, maybe we can suggest is slowing down somewhat. You know, he's working a bit of a lighter schedule and not the G1.
He's also looking a bit lighter as well. It's, you know, and maybe that's a conscious decision.
But you know,
as you're preparing for your decade of the 50s be going into, he's got to be ready for the G1 2035.
But you watch a match like this, and I really don't sense he's missed any sort of beat at all. Like, he looked fantastic here, and Moxley gave him a ton here with several kickouts of, like, you know, like some of his bigger maneuvers, like the curb stomp and the regular paradigm shift. And the sort of justification, I think, for it is that Ishii has no neck, therefore you can't hurt his neck. So he's able to survive a lot of these like neck focusing moves. It worked really well here and gave Ishii this sort of like very unique superpower about him that he could withstand all of this. So it was a really great TV match.
Even when Ishii's like physicality starts to like weaken and, you know, you see those signs of aging, it's his timing that is going to, I think, be like his ace up his sleeve that eventually that will go too. But that's such a critical part.
And his selling.
The selling, and it really, it goes hand in hand. It's just when to be there and doing the right thing at the right time, the staggered selling, and all the little like aspects to a Tomohiro Ishii match that I think will be able to camouflage like just a guy that will be in his 50s and, you know, continuing to, you know, trying to put on like these matches that are a pretty high standard he has set for himself.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 Climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. The Young Bucks are trying to get Tony Khan into Tony Khan's office. They need, quote, a money match, don't we all? And they're going to be watching Jurassic Express's match later tonight. There's a preview of Chris Statlander and Timeless Tony Storm and into the street fight. The Demand versus the Hurt Syndicate. And in a tribute to Loki, the Hurt Syndicate came out. Tonight, they were the Hurt Business Casual.
That they were, yes.
Yes. Lashley and Shelton, well, Lashley especially, worked this whole match with this dress shirt on. Shelton tried and then ditched it at a certain point. This was quite the look for Bobby Lashley, with like his sneakers and then like slacks and an open buttoned dress shirt.
The thinking of this was, I think, pretty ridiculous to begin with, like, because, you know, it's not like this was an impromptu match that was made on the spot. They knew this about a week in advance. So to enter a street fight, these two decided to wear full on suits. So
they're method actors. If they were to engage in a street fight, they would likely be in this type of clothing. So they need to be in the mindset.
Sure, but the effect of it was wonderful, because seeing Bobby Lashley deliver his spears with like a flailing dress shirt trailing him like a cape, it was awesome.
Okay, we have breaking news. Okay, Big Data and Panel is now the most ominous team going today. So last week, SmackDown had fallen with the Big Data and Panel method down to just over 1.2 million viewers and a 0.35. This past Friday's SmackDown, 1,030,000 viewers and a 0.23. That is frighteningly low.
Like, at this point, do we ask if there's some sort of mistake? But like, that somehow localized to professional wrestling versus, you know, other sports.
This is not impacting. Like, I'm looking at this, like the WNBA playoffs did like the number you would expect. It's like Fox News is in the level you would expect. I mean, this is so specific to wrestling. That is easily their lowest number on the USA Network. That would be probably, I would double check this. I'm outside of the FS1 shows of SmackDown. This is the lowest SmackDown in history. A 0.23. So under the old method, last week's number would have been a 0.41. And we're talking about a 0.23 this week. Like, we're talking almost cutting your 18 to 49 audience in half. That is crazy. But yet, third for the night on cable. So there's that aspect to it. That is, as poorly as these numbers are, they're still on the top three. But realistically, like, this show should have been number two, if not number one. You know, it was this WNBA finals actually did a very, very good number. So they probably would not have beaten that even under the old system. But there you go, folks. Back to the Hurt Syndicate and the Demand. So we got like a 16 and a half minute hardcore match where Ricochet, I felt, was kind of the star of this whole thing, where he just incorporated a lot of his flying mixed with weapon strikes. So we had crutches, chairs, trash can lids, and of course, good old reliable kendo sticks. Lashley just continues wearing this shirt. It was the most amazing thing throughout this match. As I'm just watching, I'm like, he's got to ditch this shirt at some point. And he was adamant about keeping this thing on. He spears Toa through a table or he goes for a spear, and Ricochet just whips a chair into him. So Toa tosses Lashley through the table on the floor, and then Khan puts Lashley through another table with an elbow, and the Gates of Agony and Ricochet outnumber MVP 3-on-1 inside of the ring, Shelton inside of the ring, and it includes Ricochet going to the top after placing Shelton on the table and hits a shooting star press with the most uncooperative table in history. And this shooting star press was no match for this reinforced table.
I think
Shelton was about ready to retire after this spot.
Mm. Yeah, or Ricochet.
Ricochet too. So, and that this move was just sickening. Khan is in the corner where there's a chair lodged in the corner, and Shelton is about to hit a running knee, and Ricochet shields Khan and takes the knee, and his head smashes into this chair. And you could see later there was this big bump forming on the back of Ricochet's head that you could see during the final minutes. This did not seem like a fun outing for Ricochet in this match. So Lashley spears Khan, then he spears Ricochet, and finally spears Toa, puts him through a table with a spine buster, and Ricochet is left alone. He begs off, and he is hit with this insane release German by Shelton, and this guy flies for Shelton through a table in the corner, and Shelton pins him. Poor Ricochet here, man. This guy just got murdered at the end here. And dude, the three count was made. They could not have gone to break in more, like they might have had 8 seconds after the finish of this before they went to commercial. And the way this ended felt like, okay, the Hurt Syndicate have decimated these three. The feud is over. We beat the leader. There was no controversy after this. The Hurt Syndicate has prevailed.
Oh, it felt entirely done. Yeah. I found it interesting that it was the leader and Ricochet getting the pin, because I feel like traditionally you'd see one of the, you know, lesser tag team members take that pin. But they've been doing a great job with the Gates of Agony, and the Gates of Agony have been doing a great job themselves of feeling like they're just,
especially Toa. Toa
monsters.
Seems to be the, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these two monsters that can like match the intensity of, you know, a Bobby Lashley and a Shelton Benjamin. So I really do understand, you know, the want to maybe protect them, because Ricochet's, you can argue, already, you know, of a certain level, and he can afford to take the pinfall. But yeah, this certainly feels like it's the end.
I just hope this guy was okay after this match, because he took some crazy like spots in this match, especially to the head. So anyway, it was
a very fun, chaotic brawl, you know, and very different.
A lot of weapons, and like the audience seemed to be into it to a degree. Mm-hmm. As much as like we skipped over, it was around 2,200 fans. I mean, it was not the most energetic atmosphere throughout the night. Renee is with, what would you say, half of the Don Callis family? I think there were 8 members here.
I counted 8, not including Don Callis.
Or did Don would be 9 because he's part of the group, of course. Don is giving out orders. He needs Alexander to destroy Ibushi on Collision. Kyle O'Reilly is such a fan of Kyle Fletcher that he named himself after him. And then Rocky Romero brags how Hechicero ripped Bandito's shoulder out of the socket last Friday, and how Okada and Takeshita are going to win tonight and go to Wrestle Dream to challenge for the tag titles, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, no Andrade as part of the scene.
No Andrade. Like, unless I missed it, I don't think they even showed like a recap of the beatdown last week. It was just very strange. Mm-hmm. That was the major angle last week.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic Express against KM and Orion. Taz mentioned getting hit with a beach ball as he was doing a read, and I would have loved to have seen this. And then this, we see the Young Bucks in the crowd after they had scored some shitty tickets and were not even seated together. Jack Perry eventually gets this beach ball, and Luchasaurus wanted no part of this beach ball bullshit, and he just got rid of this beach ball in quick fashion. They knock KM to the floor, and they hit the countdown to extinction, getting the win. The Bucks storm the ring, pull out Perry, low blow and a BTE trigger to Luchasaurus, and then Nick calls this a callback as they take out Perry, make the challenge for Wrestle Dream, and hit a TK driver. And they are going to get their money match, a $500,000 award to the winner at Wrestle Dream with Jurassic Express and the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm. you know, this is just meant to be a showcase for the new Jurassic Express, and primarily Jack Perry, who hadn't wrestled properly in, what, a year? Something like that. So it was our chance to also see what the sort of newer version of Jack Perry would look like as part of a Jurassic Express team. And, you know, you got to see him retain some of that heel edge. At one point, he was trying to, like, take off the turnbuckle, just teasing a bit of more of a sort of a different, you know, of role than what he was as Jungle Boy, of course. So that was neat. I think it's a, you know, pretty good match to have on a pay-per-view with two, well, it's fresh now, but yeah, two legacy teams here.
Yeah, we'll run through the pay-per-view because there was a lot of matches added tonight on the show. The Death Riders are with Pac Marquardt, as he addresses Tangerine Balls, and the Bastard is back, and he is looking for a snack, a pack snack, and he will out wrestle, outclass, and make Orange Cassidy suffer. And then we're moving upward and onward beyond the level of Orange Cassidy. Yuta says how the Death Riders need to cut the fat in AEW. I don't think there's any fat to cut on Pac.
Mm-mm. No.
We saw him without a shirt tonight, or basically without a shirt in a singlet. Mm-hmm. The man does not need to be covering. And Garcia explains that he sees a lot of losers here in AEW. But we are winners. That's what winners do. They win. Noted.
Well, they choose to win. And that's what they do. They choose.
They choose.
Yeah. So it was our chance to, you know, hear from some of the, I guess, junior members of the Death Riders here. Not to say Pac is one of them, but I would say... less seen members of the Death Riders recently, and thought Pac and Garcia sounded great. Yuta is trying.
Yeah, this looks like you know, the Death Riders doing like their interpretation of like The Conjuring here with Pac. No. Kyle Fletcher and Kyle O'Reilly for the TNT title, our rematch from Kent, Washington. And magic did not replicate itself. Kyle is just going for plenty of submissions. He hits a dragon screw on the corner, but missed the bombs away knee drop. So Fletcher hits him with a knee strike, misses with the brain buster. So he lawn darts Kyle O'Reilly into the corner. And then it's a tornado DDT by O'Reilly and kicks out the knee, hits a PK, and Fletcher responds with a big lariat, goes for the toe hold and a shining wizard from behind. Kyle goes back to the toe hold and Fletcher rolls out, hits a brainbuster, running kick, and a follow-up brainbuster, pinning O'Reilly in 13 minutes and 10 seconds. Very good match between these two. Just did not have a whole lot of heat attached to this. And if you remembered the first match, I think it would have, the atmosphere was so key to the whole reason behind this match.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a great in-ring showcase for Kyle O'Reilly, who really hasn't had this sort of like singles match spotlight on Dynamite too often, and he's outstanding. But on this roster, everybody is outstanding. Even within his own faction, everybody is outstanding. So it almost makes Kyle, unfortunately, like somebody as great as him, it kind of makes him feel average. And I really hate saying that because he's one of my favorites, but everybody on this roster is just so, so good. But this is a great match. I you know, like mentioning the sort of level of interest, I really wish there was a bit more believability to Kyle O'Reilly, his chances of winning. And that might have been able to be achieved with a bit more TV time, with a bit more promo time. But, I mean, this was just really a match that was put out together, built on the appeal of both of their names being Kyle, which did not really land at all with this audience.
Wow. Do you think Kyle versus Kyle 2 was the bigger selling feature than TNT Championship on Title Tuesday? Our only advertised title match in advance that where we knew the participants.
I would say so, yeah, yeah.
This was their show.
Because nobody thought Kyle O'Reilly really had any sort of chance, of course.
Renee interviewed Kyle after, or sorry, Lance Archer comes after O'Reilly. So that prompts Roderick Strong and Tomohiro Ishii to come out. Rocky Romero comes down. And then Mark Briscoe is the last one out, coming to a standoff with Fletcher, who backs down. And Renee interviews Fletcher, brings up the fact that Mark has beat him in the past. And Tony Khan, busy in his office, has made the match. It is Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe at WrestleDream for the TNT title.
Mm-hmm. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Mercedes Moné is out, and who would be the mystery opponent? And 10 years after the fact, Izzy was at home watching this, and it is Lacey Lane, the former Caden Carter, who her 0-2 record in ROH prompted her to get this big opportunity. And Danielson was a little let down. He said, "I was hoping for Debbie Malenko," which would have been great. So listen,
perfectly fine. Okay. Like perfectly fine. Ex WWE. Sure. But to build her in this fashion with an open challenge tease, mystery tease, somebody from Orlando, whatever, like as if she's that identifiable from Orlando, ultimately just worked against her and just kind of like let people probably get their hopes up a little too much. You know, Lacey Lane, Caden Carter is not the level of star that I think could warrant or justify disappointing audiences with something like this.
Whenever you do the mystery gimmick, you're giving your audience license to let their imagination go wild. So if you don't have something that is at least going to be in the ballpark of those expectations, then you're doing a disservice to the person that has to fill the spot. And that's exactly what they did here. I mean, I know they love doing their surprises, but I mean, this...
Well, you got to deliver on the surprise. And
kind of surprise reaction from anyone. And you've like, she's literally been utilized the last few weeks in ROH. It's not even like this is a first time utilization of her in this like adjacent company. So she comes out and Lane sends her to the floor. Like, you want to talk about a lack of believability in Kyle O'Reilly winning? Like, they pretty much... they wanted to recreate Becky and Maxine from last night, and the difference being
not recreate, but to do a similar match. As
it was the same idea. Like, they did all these near falls.
But to say they're trying to recreate would to be able to say that they're trying to copy that, which I don't think they were trying to. They were trying to do a similar type of match.
I think they were going out with the same objective, like to accomplish, like the challenger that was the big underdog, and all these near falls they did. Like, the crowd reacted to none of them. Lane hit a heat seeker, but Moné gets the foot on the rope. Moné then takes over during the picture-in-picture, hits the three amigos, and then a frog splash lands on Lane's knees. And twice, Mercedes missed the running knees in the corner and hits a sunset bomb out of the corner, misses the double knees the second time, and then it's Lane with a springboard leg drop and then a hammerlock flatliner for a two count that, again, it just got no reaction. They do these roll-up exchanges, ending in the moneymaker, and Mercedes retains the TBS title. She will make it to 500 days as TBS champion. So, man, they had the chance here. They could have flipped everything on its head, but Mercedes wins in 9:23. I didn't think this match stood out really at all on the show. It was kind of just there. I didn't think too highly of it.
I thought Lacey Lane looked better than she did the last time we saw her in WWE. I mean, really, she's never had the chance to showcase her abilities in a singles capacity like this. And I thought her kick stood out. Her movement was very good. But I really do think like being a part of this like surprise open challenge type of thing was really worked against her and really probably set expectations a little too high. She is just not a big enough name to just sort of warrant this. If instead she just showed up and you had a week or two to build up just to this,
this is the perfect type
challenge.
Of challenger. Exactly. You bring in, she wins a couple of matches on TV, you establish a few moves and you get like three wins and you lose on TV. Yeah. Like doing the mystery gimmick here did her no favors.
Yeah. If you're looking for this as a way to introduce her, sure, it's fine. But I don't think it was the best. And of course, a big part of my disappointment is the fact that I really wanted this to be Izzy Moreno, which was not the case.
20-year anniversary.
Yeah, they're saving it. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Guevara cut a promo with Beast Mortos, warning Eddie Kingston, you only survived Dralistico last week, but you're not facing a man on Collision. You're facing a beast. And Kingston, adorned in his long and winding Royal Road shirt with Hook, just tells Mortos he's going to get his ass kicked. So this should be a fun match on Collision.
Yeah, so this Eddie Kingston LFI feud continues to be a Collision exclusive thing, which again is perfectly fine, but it just feels so weird that somebody as big as Eddie Kingston wouldn't have at least, you know, had a welcome back promo of some sort on the bigger show in Dynamite. So he's waking his way through the LFI members, ultimately leading to Sammy, of course, and then someday we'll see him on Dynamite again.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when Hunter tore his quad, I think this is the template they should have followed.
You know? Hunter should have debuted on Velocity.
Yeah. I mean, save that music licensing money for someone else and bring him back, and don't do the whole Madison Square Garden thing. Just bring him back, mystery opponent, and
I'm jacked.
Jacked. Well, he was jacked that night when he returned. Brodito against Kazuchika Okada and Konosuke Takeshita, double Jeopardy match. And as we spoke about, like, the Bandido shoulder injury, I mean, it was the whole story of the match here, with the shoulder taped up. And I think it pretty much was very transparent to people that they used Friday to set this up. And if you weren't so sure, his very first sequence, he does a kip up on this damaged shoulder. But Okada and Takeshita lay out Brody, and Okada and Takeshita, I thought they did a really good job of, like, these two guys that are, like, they're basically both performing on their own, but they're in a tag match and they're just getting in each other's faces.
And they get along.
They're getting along, but there's miscommunication. There's errant blows that each hit on the other. Bandido ends up, at one point, he pulls up Okada almost like a can opener as Takeshita misses and ends up kicking his partner in the back of the head. And then King and Brodito set up for the monkey flip 450, but Okada takes Brodito's arm and snaps the injured arm over the top rope, and Takeshita lifts Brody for the wheelbarrow. But King pops up, and then Takeshita hits a blue thunderbomb to Brody King, which looked fantastic. Takeshita follows, tries for a raging fire. Bandido turns it into a small package, and then Takeshita misses Bandido and knees Okada off the apron, and Bandido lifts him up with the good arm with a one-armed X knee, goes for the 21-plex, but the arm gives out. He's hit with a poison Rana, and as Takeshita sets up for the knee, Okada was late getting to the corner to steal the tag, and Takeshita had to, like, hold on to the rope. He, like, Jeff, God damn it!
Yeah,
the greatest Rico spot.
Kazuchika, goddammit.
Okada, bitch. And so Okada, late to the party, tags in, hits the Rainmaker, and steals the pin from his partner. Pinning Bandido sets up the tag title match for Wrestle Dream. All in all, I did like the setup for this, and it does continue to put off this inevitable Okada Takeshita match for at least another pay-per-view cycle, and another, like, very strong match for the pay-per-view.
Yeah. I ultimately found this pretty enjoyable. Maybe not to the level that I think I had pictured in my mind, but they will have another chance at just kind of really smoothing things out. You know, whether real or fake, this Bandido shoulder injury, I thought, was very well utilized to make the match a bit more interesting. And of course, it gave the team an excuse to lose as well, to introduce a new story for Bandido. So I thought that was very well done.
Yeah, I think he's going to work this, like this should be the focus of the tag match as well. It's like he's got to work with the one arm. And I did like the stuff down the stretch, like with the 21 plex giving out and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, can they get along is really such a cliche, you know, in modern professional wrestling tag teams with single stars. And I didn't think this was the best example of it. I mean, a rare case of, like, you know, a point where we can point to Kazuchika Okada messing up a spot. And fortunately, it was the finish here. But otherwise, of course, like, the big match is happening on the pay-per-view, and I'm still very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think these four have a bigger match in them, and hopefully we get it in St. Louis. Renee interviews Willow Nightingale and Jetspeed. I swear to God, Speedball Mike Bailey gave us a speech about standing up to bullies, and when you stand up to them, they fall. Knight, who should be doing all the talking for the two of them, says that they aren't top guys when they take the low road. And Willow provided some charisma here as well as we get ready for this intergender six-person tag on Collision. FTR and Stokely responded, they don't respect Willow, and says that Dax would have beaten Kevin Knight on Collision if not for Willow. Stoke explains, who needs hoes when you have two bad bitches? In walks Megan Bain with Penelope Ford, and Bain warns Willow and hypes up the Collision matches, and instead of top guys out, it is top gods out.
Hmm. A rare case that we get to hear Megan Bain actually speak and cut a promo. And you know what? Like,
is she here for the simple purpose of eventually being the one to offset Beth Copeland?
I suggested that on Collision. Thank you for listening, John.
It was a busy night.
It's okay. But yeah, like, I mean, you know, it's FTR. Of course, they have an outstanding feud with Beth. And I mean, Megan Bain and Beth are very similar characters. At least, you know, Beth was a very similar character to Megan Bain. So I feel like that seems very natural. But at least as a promo, I thought you had a bit of a gauge of where she was at. I didn't think this was her best work. So, yeah, but I'm looking forward to the match, though.
Looked like Tiffany Stratton here next to Stephanie Vaquer.
She is massive, yes.
Mm-hmm. Renee spoke with Brodito. I really like this. Bandito is not going to make any excuses, but he takes the blame. And Brody is not going to hear of this. He gives Bandito a pep talk. Says, we're going to return harder, and you are the best pro wrestler walking the face of the earth, and we're going to retain those belts. I just thought this was like a great segment between these two. They're a great team, but I think like stuff like this, it establishes a team as having like a real bond together. And I don't think it hurts the fact that you have so many of these great wrestlers, and Bandito's having this amazing year. Sometimes it just is nice to have someone reiterate, this guy is in the conversation among the best wrestlers today. And just hitting that, I think like that's a good way to like just really promote Bandito. Like, this is a guy who's having a career year. Let's amplify that.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of peers might disagree with this, but like, you can have all the great wrestling you want, and that is completely important, especially when you're talking about AEW. But that can't be the only thing, you know, and you need these sort of characterization moments. You need to put your baby faces through obstacles and to have them express self-doubt. And I thought Bandito managed to do that here with Brody King being the sort of uplifting voice next to him. And now I know at least a little bit about who these guys are behind the moves. So I thought this was hugely beneficial to them, more so than even just the match itself.
And then Brody looked into the camera and said, hey, TBS, fuck those ice ads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 Climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Orange Cassidy and Pac is the main event, their fifth singles match, with Pac having a 2-1 advantage and a no contest in that mix. And we start off with a lot of mat wrestling. But before we get to the match, what did you think of Pac took off the t-shirt and he was wearing tights and like a singlet. What'd you think of this?
Singlet, dude, it was so weird seeing Pac in a singlet. I mean,
weird look.
Just odd. But I respect the commitment to changing his look. Somehow he looked
at this guy, dude.
He looked even more massive in a singlet than without. And I mean, I'm sure he's been working out in his off time as well. But yeah, a weird look for this dude. But I feel like I'll get used to it.
So there's a lot of mat wrestling early on, and then they go to the floor. Cassidy gets thrown into the rail, and now it's Pac delivering middle fingers. I think the Death Riders certainly have the market share of middle fingers. Cassidy starts to fight back, tries for a beach break, and then lands the PK and a stun dog on the floor, leaps through the ropes for a tornado, and then an orange punch sends Pac onto the timekeeper's table, and Cassidy leaps off the top, diving through Pac with a much more cooperative table than Ricochet and Shelton had. And Cassidy brings him into the ring and hits this gorgeous satellite DDT, but Danielson emphasizing, and a kip up! A kip up! He was so impressed with this kip up. Like, let's not bury the lead here. Nice satellite DDT, but the man kipped up.
It might not be an offensive maneuver, but that, it might actually be a tougher physical feat for most people to do than a satellite DDT.
It's a kip up. So Pac does the slow roll away, a la Cassidy, going to the ramp, and then he climbs into the stands. Cassidy goes after him and gets caught and hit with a tombstone in the bleachers, and then is kicked down the steps. At least that's what Excalibur told us, because the camera did not catch Cassidy taking this tumble down all the steps. So that was fun. And Pac realizes he has been chained to the rail by Darby Allin, who is just hiding behind these bleachers. Pac rips the chain off. Again, we did not see this. He just escaped. And he is struggling to get to the ring. And I thought, my God, they are going to try and have the worst countout finish this week, because the bar was exceptionally low after last night. But Pac did make it into the ring at the count of nine.
This would have been better than the Becky one.
Yeah, it would have been, but not too far off. So Pac struggles to get into the ring, gets in there at nine, and right into a roll-up by Cassidy, who catches Pac with the three count, and he wins in 15 minutes and 39 seconds.
Very good match, like almost all the matches on Dynamite. But not a ton of heat for this one, and
I struggled in that regard. Really, this show, like, the atmosphere was, to me, a negative overall on this show.
But I remember Daly's Place sounding much better than this and on previous shows, you know? So, it's a
venue that holds 5,000, and it had less than half that tonight.
Yeah, yeah. But Pac is looking fantastic, as is Cassidy. I mean, these are two recent returns, and both of them are still looking like they're in their prime.
I liked it. It went through like these chapters. Like, we did the Matt stuff, and then we like it slowly escalated into the kind of match you would expect from these two. And they were doing a TV match. This was not kind of like your pay-per-view caliber, but I thought it was a very enjoyable match. It was just it was tough to get into a lot of these matches, especially kind of the back half of the show.
Yeah, and I feel like support from the show could really be better, like in just spending the time to build up my anticipation for these matches. I mean, most we get is just really a promo. Yes, I understand this is part of a bigger feud, but it doesn't really feel like this was, like, this does not feel like it was a main event, you know, at the end of a 2.5 hour show.
And on a show called Title Tuesday, I mean, it was like, I'm not that much of a nitpicker on the stuff, but it was like, it kind of felt like, I don't know, maybe the theme was a little off. But you know what? This crowd, what they were really waiting for?
Molotov Tuesday.
Attempted murder. Darby stares down Pac as he comes and then chases after him. And Pac gets sprayed in the face with something. The visual of this was terrible. Like, say whatever you will. If this were like WWE, when they do these kind of visual things, it's going to be like some gigantic spectacle that would have like been an explosion in his face. But it's like this spray, like mace, that went in his eyes, and then all the announcers are like coughing and choking. It was so goofy. And then Darby pulls out a taser to keep the other Death Riders at bay, and he goes up the ramp, and suddenly he has got a Molotov cocktail, and he is going to torch everybody. But then this brave security man tackles Darby down to the ground. And
when did they hire Bron Breakker at Daly's Place?
I mean, they like killed Darby with this tackle. So he is not able to light the Molotov cocktail. And
what was he going to do? Like, burn Daly's Place down?
I mean, it was like, what was going to catch fire here? Like, was he going to throw it into a car? Like, you just throw this at, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the plan was here. Maybe this was
a lot of things can catch fire.
I don't know. Excalibur explains he is scared of what these two will do in St. Louis. I will say this, that I thought this angle was so fucking goofy. I thought this was so ridiculous.
I feel like you said that about every Darby Allin stunt that they've done over the past month.
Well, add this to the list. But at the end of it, I think anyone that has followed these characters at any level knows that this I Quit match is probably going to be another level when it comes to an violent AEW match, and that is a very high bar, but I feel these two have a death wish to exceed it. And that seems to be the appeal of this match, is that this is going to be the most insane match that Darby Allin and Jon Moxley have ever had, respectively.
They have been successful in conveying that. The fact that, like, everything you're seeing right now, between dragging people in coffins to, or body bags, to, what did they do last week? Was it a flame? They did a flamethrower, and then what was last week? What did they do?
There was the flamethrower.
It was so big, I don't even remember.
Yeah, I mean, it feels ridiculous. Like just yesterday that Jon Moxley was lit on fire, and like to the point that, like, this feels like this is the main event of the pay-per-view above Hangman and Joe. I don't know if they'll close with this, but yeah, it feels like they're promoting this as the main event.
Yeah, I mean, they had that crazy match, and then you had what happened here? Darby splitting the Mox's. Okay, so it was Mox on top last week. So I don't think we really got a stunt last week. Anyway,
the go home stunt be next week?
Might involve a vehicle. Where are they? Are there any trains nearby? You know, maybe an airplane, maybe a tank. You know, you never know. But
you don't see fire. I think fire is the unifying element that they want to incorporate. They are Kansas City next week.
I think a car on fire, with like 50 body bags dragging behind it.
What if a car explodes? All on fire. That's our final scene going into the pay per view.
Yeah, well, our imaginations are running wild, which means I think this build has been plenty successful, because I think that they want our imaginations to go wild.
So what did you think about Title Tuesday, Way?
I thought overall it was, I was excited for the show on paper. Like, I thought it was a very good-looking show on paper. A lot of the matches I thought, like, were fine, but maybe it was just missing that sort of excitement. And maybe that's down to just what wasn't a great crowd. Ultimately, I don't know how much you blame the crowd, because I don't know how exciting these matches were beyond just, you know, realizing, oh, it's two great wrestlers wrestling. I can understand crowds needing a bit more than that to really kind of get excited, especially for these title matches, you know.
Maybe they were all Toronto Blue Jays fans and they were following along and would now know that the Jays have lost 9-6. So game 4 is on the horizon Wednesday night.
9-6. All right. Okay. We'll see. This is a series.
The game's in New York.
Mm-hmm. Could we be back here? So what's the schedule? Game on Wednesday and then game on?
Game 5, which I think would be Trey Savage would get the start in game 5, which would be incredible if that guy gets back, unless they figured this guy out. So game 5, if they go to it, would be Friday night. Oh, but there's no SmackDown Friday night. So yeah. There you go.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, I'm at a wedding, so can't watch it, but okay.
Yeah, you can bring your phone. You'll be the life of the party.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there you go. The updated lineup. We have 6 matches announced for WrestleDream. Darby Allin and Moxley in the I Quit match. Hangman Page against Samoa Joe. Statlander against Tony Storm. Jurassic Express against Young Bucks for $500,000. Kyle Fletcher against Mark Briscoe for the TNT title. And Brodito against Okada and Takeshita. So I do not have any concerns about this being another very solid AEW pay-per-view. But we only have like a third of the card, so there's still plenty to come.
Yeah, I mean, the reputation of these shows is still really, really high. When you just kind of put this talent on these marathon shows and let them perform, you're usually going to get your money's worth, and it's certainly shaping up to be that way with the roster that they have.
And like, we could theoretically get like a Kenny Omega Andrade match on this show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So more to come. There you go. Those were our thoughts on Title Tuesday. And again, a reminder that you can go here on the channel and listen to Davey and Braden with a full review of NXT Showdown. We are going to say goodbye here on the YouTube channel, but we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if you want to upgrade and join the Post Wrestling Cafe, you get the XL version of these shows, which include all the news of the day and then your feedback and questions at the end of the show. So goodbye on YouTube, and we will head to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.